welcome to Too Much Scrolling for May 17th, 2016. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflow.
And we're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, we've got the Cannes Film Festival going on in France. We're not there.
We're not?
Our press passes got lost in the mail, I think.
Why don't they fly us over there? Don't they know we review movies?
We do. We review movies. They should really give us consideration.
Exactly.
The other thing that's happening this week is Google I.O. starts tomorrow.
There you go.
That's a conference I'd like to go to.
And this is Google, not Alphabet.
They still call it Google I.O. I'm not sure that they could call it Alphabet I.O. I think they would have to call it Alphabet A.B., and that's a whole different conference. I don't even know what that means. Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. And you and I sat down on Saturday morning and watched Pele, Birth of a Legend. We talked about this one a few weeks ago.
Sure.
And this was a good movie.
We enjoyed the Pele.
We're
going to start speaking Portuguese now.
All right.
This was fun. This is a beautiful film.
It's a dramatization of the life of Pele.
With just a little bit of a cameo for Pele, right?
Where he stares at the camera for just an extra second longer than he should have. Hey, look, it's Pele, everybody.
That's right. And then he's going to wink at us.
Yeah.
Give us a thumbs up.
That would have been better if he had looked at the camera for a second, winked, and then gave a thumbs up. This is a good movie. I like the different structures that it had. It had like two or three different stories in it.
Well, I immediately think that what Muhammad Ali is to the American public, Pele is definitely to the Brazilian public. Mm-hmm. And when the Olympics go, I absolutely expect Pele to play a big, big part on what's going on. And also the World Cup when it goes down there. I enjoy this. I think that we sometimes miss, you know, the poverty of where he grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get was it Seu Jorge, which plays his father.
Yeah.
And he's a wonderful musician. Anyway, it's just kind of interesting. You start recognize all the people there. And I wonder if they filmed this in Portuguese and in English, maybe at the same time.
That's a good question. I do not know the answer to.
But I immediately thought of, you know, everybody sitting around in these basically poor communities, either looking at a television or listening to a radio, and, you know, you recognize what Pele meant to Brazil, ultimately to the sport of soccer in the world. I mean, eventually, which is not covered in this film, Pele is playing for New York City. He's playing for the New York Cosmos. He is the face of the North American Soccer League. The idea was to build, ultimately, the NFL, but in soccer in the United States, and it didn't quite work out that way. We have Major League Soccer now, which is a little bit different. But my point is, I enjoyed the look of this film. And definitely family friendly.
Yeah, I said out loud while we were watching it, I enjoy the cinematography. I like the way that they put this together. There was a lot of jump cuts. It was very quick at the beginning up until the climax, that last piece where we're so excited for the final game, and the pacing changed. And I didn't like the way that it changed, but I like this movie. I think everybody should go see it, even if you don't like soccer.
And Pele, I did not realize, was basically a name that was given to him. It was kind of an insult.
It was an insult that he hoisted upon himself and took on and ran with, literally.
The shoeless one.
The shoeless ones. It was so cute. I also went to the movie theater and saw Captain America Civil War this week. I liked this one, too. There's a little bit too many dead parents for me. It was a little
you
too emotional.
People?
It was a little too... It wasn't Superman versus Batman, but that fight between friends, that emotional, nobody's wrong and nobody's right, but we are going to stand our ground, and a dead dad here and there. It was a very emotional story.
Well, you know, I think that Robert Downey Jr.'s character, Tony Stark, really kind of grasped it correctly. Iron Man and Captain America are good friends.
Mm-hmm.
But Bucky and Captain America are good friends, too.
Mm-hmm.
And Bucky obviously went through a lot of challenges. And then it just, the thing that I keep coming back to, boy, Tony Stark and his family certainly made a mess of a lot of things, didn't they?
A lot of lives, yeah. Stark, don't ever trust a Stark is what Ant-Man says in there. Yeah, that's watch out for them Starks. There's no doubt about that.
Sure.
There is a death
There is?
In this movie. And it's really emotional.
Who was the death?
The Agent Carter dies in Captain America's Civil War. She's 95 years old, and she dies.
That's right. She lived a long and fruitful life. So I guess I could say that somebody did die. I was looking like, who are you talking about?
But ABC has also canceled Agent Carter on the TV side.
Well, yes. So, looks like Netflix is like really doing well with the Marvel characters, mm-hmm. but the Marvel... I'm assuming the Agent Carter and the Shield and stuff are under the movie side of the company, and they're struggling a little bit more on that side.
ABC did bring back BattleBots though, so I've got that to watch on ABC.
There's no death involved in BattleBots;
just destruction. I love BattleBots. I grew up being a fan of wrestling. This is like wrestling and technology put together, and I'm riveted every time I watch BattleBots.
I can imagine. And for, you know, it does require an intellectual skill, mm-hmm. a mechanical and engineering skill. You know, think of all that goes into putting together what type of robot that's going to battle the unknown robot. Uh-huh.
And think about all the first world problems of the money that you're looking at being destroyed every week.
You've got like, I've got 12 Raspberry Pis hooked up to this thing.
I love it. And my kids love it. My kids get into it just as much as I do.
Oh, how wonderful.
You got a chance to see The Family Fang. This is another one that we talked about a few weeks ago. This is a very interesting story.
All right, so The Family Fang is about this art family. They do performance art, and this is before YouTube and before anything. Something would happen. They would create the event that happened, and then you would hear the story. So there was a group of people that would experience it, and then it would get reported out. Somehow I thought this was a true story, but this is not a true story.
Nope, this is based on a novel from 2011.
So Jason Bateman is our director of this. He also stars in this. Nicole Kidman's company bought the rights to do this movie, and she also stars in it. So they've got a great cast involved there, and it's about two wacky parents and their performance art, and then the kids who had to live through that, they were part of this performance art, and sort of how it played out.
And let's not forget, Christopher Walken is the wacky dad.
He is the wacky dad.
You could sell me a Christopher Walken wacky movie anytime.
On many levels, this movie reminded me a lot of Tim Burton's The Big Fish from a few years ago. In fact, Tim Burton, in many ways, should have directed this. I'm not saying this that Bateman didn't do a good job. This played perfectly well. But I think the oddness that Tim Burton films would bring to it would heighten it a little bit and stuff like that. But I think that this is a movie that's exploring that same subject. The myth-making, the storytelling, the ability to kind of create something that's unexpected. And then finding the truth within it. This was an interesting movie. I saw it through iTunes. This is in the theaters right now, too. I like this film, and I would recommend it to anybody who has a little bit of interest in sort of an eccentric artist family.
That's The Family Fang, if you're interested in that one. You watched The Bridge of Spies. That's a very critically acclaimed one.
Now, this has Steven Spielberg as our director.
Okay.
And Tom Hanks.
There you go.
So there you go. You know you're going to get and this is based on true historic events. Mm-hmm. So we have an attorney who ultimately is forced to play the John Adams part. So if we go back to history, John Adams was forced to defend a group of British soldiers after the Boston Massacre. He was vilified for it, and it was not a good part. Well, Tom Hanks' character is forced to defend a Soviet spy, a spy that had been caught, and he ultimately defends him. The Soviet spy had been railroaded through the court system, and what Hanks brought to the table was that maybe one day, if we don't kill him, we can trade him for someone who we get, a United States spy, who gets caught. Well, what do you think happened? We have an airplane that gets shot down. We've got a pilot who's over in Soviet space who goes through a kangaroo court also and is jailed and all sorts of stuff. There's going to be a trade that takes place. During this time, there was a student who was going to Yale. who kind of snuck over to East Germany. There was a break in the wall, and go back in time, that was, it's part of our history, but certainly if you're younger than us, you certainly wouldn't remember this. There was two Germanys. There was East Germany, which was the Soviet side, and then there was West Germany, which was the free world side. And Berlin was split in half, and there was a wall. And that was, if you remember the Reagan speech, we said, tear that wall down. Well, anyway, we have a gentleman who snuck over to go get a professor and maybe his wife or somebody, and because there was a hole that was blown into this wall. Well, he gets caught over there, and there's a trade that's going to take place. What you get is a little bit of a feeling of what it was like living in East Germany during that time, and just sort of how oppressive it is. I mean, it would change you very quickly. So Tom Hanks' character, who is a very bright attorney, has to go over and experience a world that may or may not be truth. Many ways you're negotiating with people who are giving you half-truths, who are trying to set themselves up. The whole Soviet system is just a mirage. I mean, it's a fake thing. The West would not recognize East Germany. So that plays into this also on how this exchange is going to take place. And we get the story of this attorney and how it works. Fascinating story. Highly recommended. I really like this a lot. I'm glad I watched it. I'm sorry I didn't see it sooner.
So kids, if you want to learn about the Cold War, The Bridge of Spies is a good, small little slice of that history.
I think so. I think people really forget how absolutely oppressive. One of the things that we learn is that Berlin was not rebuilt after the war, where on the West side, it totally was. But it was, the Soviets were punishing the people who lived in East Germany from that. Oh, it's just fascinating.
The other one you got to see was Persepolis.
Persepolis is based on a graphic novel or a comic. I had read this many, many years ago. And through iTunes, there's also a con festival section. So this was debuted there. And so I saw this film based on it recommending it for me. This is a story of what happened to Iran. So Iran was a fairly progressive area at one time, very modern. Men and women had modern cities. I mean, you name it, it was right on the cusp. Just like, you know, like Europe, I would say at the time, like the United States was at the time, growing the same way. You know, what happened to Iran that made it what it is today, where it's a highly religious area? You know, the women are almost second-tier citizens. It's purported to be a very violent area. I think that's pretty fair to say that there's a lot of tension in that area. Well, the Americans had some involvement. England had some involvement into this. And we learned the story from a person who was a young child there. And who was going through that experience. And then she ended up going to school in France. This is a fascinating story. If you want to read the graphic novel, it is equally as good. But this cartoon is based off of it. And, highly recommended. Very good. Most of us do not know enough history of the Middle East. This is a good place to get part of that history.
Opening this week, we've got a movie about New York Congressman Anthony Weiner, who was trying to run for mayor of New York and didn't go so well for him.
Well, obviously, if we know a little bit of history, modern history, Weiner had a challenge with Twitter that may have his name involved in it.
That's right. Kind of ironic.
But what we're doing is what we recognize, even right now, I mean, Donald Trump is running for office. Hillary Clinton is running for office. Those names, as soon as I mention it, there's all sorts of emotions that come forward on that, whether you like them or dislike them. Well, Anthony Weiner, you also have emotions on because he was part of a scandal. Mm-hmm. He ultimately got married to one of Clinton's aides. And he, while he resigned from office, was running for New York mayor. And there was a person who had him agree to film him. So we got a charismatic guy who has all the challenges, ask all the questions he doesn't want to answer, mm-hmm. Who's going through and trying to rebuild his career. One of the things that's very American is this ability of forgiveness and moving forward. I mean, my goodness, there's plenty of scandalized politicians who eventually make it back. Mm-hmm. And Anthony Weiner wants to be one of those. Of all the movies we're going to talk about this week, this is the one I want to see.
And that's a documentary. The other one's called Hard Sell. This is, it reminds me very much of a risky business. This is the 21st century risky business. A kid finds a beautiful young lady who just happens to make money in ways that we might find difficult.
Did you say prostitute?
I didn't. Okay. And then finds that maybe she could be a wonderful human, and maybe this is a love story.
And sort of ultimately giving him the confidence to find his love. This has got Kristen Chenoweth in it, our favorite little sprite woman.
Oh, I love Kristen Chenoweth.
But anyway, she is a mother who's having a bunch of challenges in this. Looks interesting. I look forward to it. Eventually it'll come out on Netflix. I'll see it at that point.
The other one's called Maggie's Plan. This is a very complicated story about a woman who falls in love with a man, and then he leaves his wife to go with her, and then she doesn't want to be in love with him anymore, so she gets a plan to send him back to his ex-wife.
And so all we need to know is Ethan Hawke is in this.
Ethan Hawke.
And he seems to play these, when I say similar characters, I shouldn't say that. Small independent films, he seems to be like, this is his magic area.
Yeah, he likes these kind of movies.
Oh, yeah. And this looks like a very capable movie. I look forward to watching this at some point, too.
And the other one's called The Art Bastard. This is about another one of those those artists who we know a little bit about, but maybe not enough. And it's a documentary about this guy.
All right. So this is about an artist who, sort of a pop artist, I would say, classically trained, it looks like, who sort of hasn't maybe well-known enough, but maybe not well-known enough. This is very much a documentary that we see a lot of. Mm-hmm. Like, let's introduce you to this person who has slipped through the cracks, and they have an audience, and let's just explore his
story.
Life. Mm-hmm. So I look forward to seeing this. This will come out at some point, and it'll be on Netflix or something, and I'll be happy to watch this. We'll learn a little bit about this artist.
Meanwhile, the rest of our audience will be going to the Angry Birds movie and Nice Guys and Neighbors 2, those pop movies that will be in all the theaters and you'll hear all about, because everybody loves the Angry Birds.
That's right. Everyone, the movies we've mentioned have limited runs, and then there's these three big films, and I don't think there's one of them that has interest in me. So.
I know that the Angry Birds was a great idea, and it took 2 or 3 years to make a nice animated film. The list of stars in this is huge. I don't know that there's any interest left.
I don't know. It seems like the bird has flown.
I think that's their tagline. Brings us to our appetite, our app of the week, and you found an app called PlantNet, and the A in plant is the at symbol.
Yes, and PlantNet seems like it's marketed as the Shazam of plant identification.
So if you're into plant identification and you want to know whether you should eat it, touch it, or leave it alone, PlantNet might be the app for you.
This app has been crowdsourced. So there are pictures of a plant. So when you go out and you're looking at a weed, or you're looking at a flower, or you're looking at some kind of tree, you can take a picture of that and then match it up to what most closely resembles that to identify what those plants are. So you'll know that, you know, that poisonous plant that you ate, that it really is poisonous and you should call the emergency room, or if there's something that's this good about it. One day you're going to land on Mars, you're going to have to identify something, mm-hmm. and to have this...
Have the database.
Yeah, and just have it available. It's going to be... That's what we have these little computers for.
Yeah, my wife is brilliant at plant identification. Right. She has a huge knowledge of all these names of these plants, and she tries really hard to help me identify plants. That's a tree. That's a bush. That's a flower.
That's a shrub. It doesn't even get to bush and tree. Well, anyway.
How to identify different types of trees from quite a long ways away. That is PlantNet.
The Shazam of plant identification.
Hey, sounds good to me. There's an app for everything. No doubt about that. Brings us to our book of the week. And you have been reading a book called Stuff, The Compulsive Hoarding and the Meaning of things. And you've been talking about this for weeks.
Yeah, it took me a little bit of time to get through. It's a fascinating, fascinating book. The two people who wrote it are researchers in this field. So they spent time interviewing these people, trying to identify the traits that make them what they are. If you've seen the television series Hoarders, or you have a friend that's a pack rat, or you have a family member, I mean, you know what this is. Mm-hmm. The result of reading this book, initially, you'll read the first chapter and immediately you will say, oh, I'm going to identify other people who do this. No, you immediately identify yourself and you start getting rid of things. I have unloaded, I mean, the number of trips I've taken to Goodwill while reading this, pretty impressive. Pretty impressive, because we are naturally collectors of stuff. Mm-hmm. Some people are better at getting rid of things than others. And what we immediately learn is that a person who is suffering from this type of mental illness, there are definitely traits. They have a very difficult time getting rid of things. Things that most of us would think are random or are meaningless. You know, they just cannot throw away the newspaper because there may be something in it that may be useful at some point in the future. Mm-hmm. Well, holy cow, we have all sorts of types. We have very wealthy people. We have poor people. We have people who collect trash who can't let it go. We have people who just collect art or anything else. It overwhelms them. You know, some people have storage units. You know, they'll just keep going. There's a lady in here who had over 200 cats. And she was a doctor. She was unloading animals to her patients. She would not allow them to be spayed or neutered. It got so bad in her home that not only did the smell overwhelm you, but having that many animals means that you cannot clean up after them. You have a shovel and you're shoveling feces into the corner of the room as opposed to removing it. Absolutely fascinating study. I've gotten rid of a lot of stuff. I'm going to get rid of more things. And the best thing I can tell you about this story, my father had a large watch collection. So he's an expert in pocket watches. And he had so many that museums, they would take this pocket watch. You could go have a big display and wow. You could have, I don't know, I mean, you could have 1,000. You could have more. But one day he moved and he said, I've got sons. Do they have interest in having this collection? In addition to that, do they have the expertise to either maintain it or to know the value of these things? Well, I mean, it takes a lifetime to have an interest, to kind of put it together. But at some point, you can let it go. And ultimately, they eBayed it away. Those watches are all over the world now.
And only half of them had souls in them.
But my point is that we all have things that we collect.
Of course we do.
And those books, you can get rid of them. You can take them over to the bookstore and hopefully sell them back to the bookstore or to the used bookstore. If you need to buy them again, go buy them again. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to keep up with them. Very interesting book. Very interesting research. I don't know if there's a real answer to it. But these people really exist. And to get rid of stuff, social workers could spend the entire day with a person on getting rid of what we would most of the time consider something meaningless, like a soft drink bottle or a broken piece of glass or something like that. And they will rationalize it over and over and over why that's impossible to do. Mm-hmm. One town spent, I think it was $16,000 to go clean out the house. Wasn't condemned, but it was such a nuisance and a potential danger that they eventually had a court order, and they evicted the person for the period of time it took to go in and clean out the home. They spent their entire budget to clean it out. Within a year, it had been refilled with stuff, because hoarders require this feeling. There's something from it. Mm-hmm. And so what the lesson you learn from that is, because this is a mental illness, that you actually have to figure out some way to get their acceptance that that's okay. And
it's a challenge.
I don't know. I don't have a true answer to it. Fascinating study.
Yeah. the first step might be reading this book. So there's your recommendation for your book this week.
It worked for me.
And then sell it back to the used bookstore after you've read it.
Absolutely.
Brings us to our Now the News segment, and there's so much news this week. Amazon is about to overtake Macy's as the biggest seller of clothing in the United States.
All right, so I'm going to be really mean to Macy's, and I'm going to be equally as I'm a slight Amazon in this. I bought clothes off Amazon before. Amazon is not the best way of purchasing clothes. I'm not saying that you can't purchase what you want, but it certainly is not the easiest place to find the thing that you want.
It's kind of hit or miss, too.
Yeah, that's right. It's almost like going to a Marshalls or a TJ Maxx, where maybe there's overstock someplace. Or, you know, if you're buying a pair of shoes, they'll take you to Zappos, but it was owned by Amazon. Mm-hmm. But many times, if you're buying from the Amazon site, you're buying like an overstock type of item. And what I would say, they may totally disagree with me, but it just seems to me like it's not well designed for looking for something that I'm looking for.
Okay.
If it is selling far more than Macy's, this is not an indictment of Amazon.
Right.
This is an indictment on Macy's.
Right.
That they've had years and years. And by the way, all retailers, JCPenney, it doesn't matter, Nordstrom's there. If you've got years and years and years to put together a new experience on the web and you are unable to capitalize on that, well, that says something else. And when you go to Nordstrom, you got people to help you out. They want to overly help you out, which is awesome. When you go to Macy's, you're by yourself. I mean, they've cut back on staff to the level that you have to search for somebody. This is on them. This is on Macy's, who is an expert on clothing, not designing something that's appealing to someone like Steve to go online to purchase their clothing. It certainly is not because Amazon's got the technology that made it work. It just kind of, we pigeon our way through that.
Right.
But that's amazing. 2017, they're going to overtake Macy's.
Yeah, I think brick and mortar retailers are in trouble. They have been for a while now.
You're seeing, if you go to a mall, you can absolutely see. They're going to have to find a new way of working. I don't know if it's going to be event places. Here in Chicago, we've got event malls like there's Gurney Mills out there, which is the discount mall, I would mm-hmm. say, which is your area may have one too, but they're like a mile long and they're huge. And then you have event malls that are like the Oak Brook and also Woodfield, which Woodfield at one time was like the largest mall in the world when it was first built. So those are event places, but if you're a smaller shopping center, kind of you're competing on a different level, and who knows what's going to happen. Maybe we end up moving to what I think APT is here in Chicago, ABT,
yeah.
Which is we have one electronic store in the area. You come visit us, we deliver to you.
It's the showroom.
That's right.
Right.
And where, like the big box place. I mean, I have no idea how H.H. Gregg and Best Buy and stuff like that really compete.
They are having struggles. There's no doubt about that.
A lot of overhead.
Apple's working on competing. We can go ahead and say they're working on a car chip.
I think that this is kind of like the Apple TV, where the Apple TV was out and they were just saying, it's just kind of a project we're working on, but you could always buy it. The automobile is the secret project called the Titan that has offices in California and in Germany, who has relationships with BMW and Mercedes, but doesn't anymore. I mean, it just seems like this is the secret project that we seem to know quite a bit about.
Yeah, they've been spending a lot on research and development. They're on track to spend $10 billion at Apple on research and development this year. That certainly points to something big.
And this is what we know. I mean, think about all the cash that's overseas that they have not brought back in the United States. Well, it's overseas for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like that this automobile will be built in Austria. And it looks like that their first vehicle will come out in 2019, 2020.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at a price range of about $75,000 for the unit, which it seems a little pricey for me. I don't have a $75,000 car.
Right.
But, they're looking at it to be an electric vehicle, battery powered, like the Tesla and not the you know, the autonomous driving car like Google.
Right.
So, I mean, it just gets crazier and crazier that the secret project we know quite a bit about.
And it will certainly be a luxurious car that it will be a statement car, just like all of the other Apple products are a statement product.
Yeah, I think that when you have Apple products, that it is signaling, because you know, there's always alternatives that may not cost as much. I think signaling is part of that. I think the most interesting thing that I've read about this recently is that they're looking at a future where personal car ownership is expected to decline. And so insurance companies, tech companies, automobile companies will be fighting over the data they collect on your use of that vehicle. That seems really interesting, because that could mean that maybe we own automobiles, Steve, and I, because we're at the right age, but maybe our children may not, or their children may never own an automobile.
Right. We just get a car that comes to us and brings us safely and effectively to where we need to go, and we don't spend the time and the money on owning.
It's our own personal bus or our own personal train. I mean, it arrives, we get into it, it takes us where we need to go. I mean, that's pretty amazing. That sounds very Jetson-ish.
We are so in the future right now. Welcome to 2016. Here is your smartphone. Here is your self-driving car. Now, if you want to unlock your cell phone, you just have to use your brain.
That seems awesome, too.
Yeah, you found this article about the idea of passwords are broken. The idea of the fingerprint scanner is okay for now, but what if we could just think and the phone would unlock?
Well, it says your EEG. This sounds so Minority Report-ish.
Yeah.
That we knew Steve was going to drive before he even knew he wanted to drive.
Oh my goodness.
We knew he wanted to get into his bank account before he even went to...
We knew that he wanted to go to Taco Bell before he even knew it, because he always wants to go to Taco Bell.
And we already had his food made for him.
Right. That's right. Because he orders the same thing every time. Here's your fat.
This is fascinating, because you're right. The way we log into stuff now, in fact, it's not even two-factor, you know, it's... I log into something, and it says, well, you're logging in from a different computer. Put your thumbprint here. Now answer this question, and now tell us, you know, such and such, such
and such. Hop on one foot and recite the Constitution.
Call this 800 number.
Yeah.
We really are dealing with two or three levels of identification, especially as we're getting into banks and insurance companies.
Because the bad guys are one step ahead. And so are we going to get to the bad guy stealing our brainwaves?
That's right.
Oh, boy. Google Fiber is moving faster than anyone expected, I think. And we're going to see a lot of changes in the way Google Fiber is going to change industries.
Well, my favorite part of this little statement is, Google won't say this out loud, but they despise the cable industry, and they find it inept, predatory, and worse still, you know, lack of innovation.
Mm-hmm.
And all I could think of is that Steve Jobs said the same thing about the cell phone companies.
Yep.
So what we have is, if your area is lucky enough to have Google come in and put fiber down, you're a blessed area.
I would love to have Google Fiber. I mean, the idea of what they are opening up, this superhighway of information, and trying very hard to stay innovative.
Sure.
It's phenomenal.
Well, our future is going to require fast service, and we just are not getting it from our local cable areas yet, although it's kind of coming. And then the infrastructure to put it in, you have to ask, you know, whether it's the village or your town put it in, or whether the company should put it in. There's all sorts of questions.
There are so many questions, and we can find the answers on Facebook, and boy, those answers are perfect.
Well, they had some challenges this week, especially they were accused by conservative groups of suppressing news that may have been trending, is what they were saying. And what we learned, or what is from this, is that in many ways, Facebook edits the trending articles. So in many ways, they have an editor. So as things on your right side, do you ever click on trending stuff? You use Twitter.
I use Twitter, so I'm seeing a raw feed of just all the info dump from everybody.
Sure. Well, I get that part. And Facebook, they have an editor, and it's a person, and they're choosing, if there's a story that's coming up, whether it comes from a more obscure source or maybe whether it comes from, say, the New York Times or the Washington Post or Chicago Tribune or something like that, where maybe a more trusted source is what I would say. They got in trouble a little bit with this, but I think that they defended themselves, that this is edited news. And if you're getting only your news from Facebook, there's a real challenge with that. If you want sort of just an algorithm, go Google News, because they'll just show you trending stories. And there's no editor at that point.
It's just based on math. It's just the algorithm.
But, I mean, there's challenges there, too. Mm-hmm. And one of the challenges that you immediately come up with is whether that information is true or not. And I shouldn't say true in the sense of... True in the sense of Wikipedia article would be true. Like if I said, Steve, hey, I need some research on this important thing. And Steve came back, he had a full article from Wikipedia. Well, that's a good start in the sense that I need to know some general information about something that doesn't really have to be verified. I just need to know kind of what it is. You know, it's a sports team or it's about some medicine or a plant or whatever it is.
But when we go deeper, we need to make sure we're checking primary sources, and that becomes very important to this.
Sure. And that's where you're dealing with, encyclopedia, maybe a more trusted source, and then the original source may be even more. But maybe the original source could be over the top. It's too detailed or too much for it. You got to determine your level of that. Well, Google, because of its algorithm, is not the best at that. So, once again, we're left with this position of finding sources with editors that maybe we like more than others. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I subscribe to one newspaper. I read probably four or five newspapers and get information from other stuff. Even on our feed that we run through Twitter and Facebook, that's edited information because I think it's trying to tell a story on things that may be of interest to us.
And we've always talked about a diversity of sources. If you have news from a diversity of sources, you might get a clearer picture of the truth, quote unquote.
Yeah, and one of the real challenges that we have in the United States is if we're getting all of our news from our local media, maybe in Canada they get a different version of that. Maybe over in Europe there's a different version. Maybe in another part of the world they have a different view of that. And maybe that different view is important to having us understand that and then, you know, helping us to make decisions on certain things. Anyway, we're in a fascinating part of our history in the sense that we have more information available to us. Too much scrolling.
That's right.
And then we are also in a fascinating part where we can be overwhelmed with information.
Too much scrolling.
That's right. That ability to pare it down to something that's important to us. Which, too much scrolling.
That's right. So we can search Google. Google is reportedly working on a device that I can put in my house. And when I say I can put in my house, I mean the day that they have this available, I'm going to give them money for this. It's kind of like the Amazon Echo, which I don't have, a microphone and a speaker that I can put in my house and I can say out loud, okay, Google. And it will tell me whatever I'm trying to find out. I want this. I want this to be my future. I want Jarvis.
Well, if you're familiar with Jarvis, Jarvis is Tony Stark's computer that he asks all his questions to. And it's called Google Chirp. That's their code name right now.
That's the code name. I don't think that's going to be the product name when it hits the market.
Chirp me this.
Yeah. chirp you.
Well, the point is that you can say, hey, Google, play music that does this. Or, hey, Google, I need this. Add this to my list. Whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It seems very Jarvis-ish.
Mm-hmm. I am ready for a voice assistant that works. I've moved from the Siri voice assistant on the iPhone to the Google voice assistant on the Android phone, and I use it every day of the week.
Well, I think that Google's voice search, I think it is superior to Siri right now. And it may continue to be.
And we've talked about this a couple of times. The reason why we think it's superior is because they have been using Google Voice and they've been recording calls and voices and using that as their context to find out what people sound like. And they've got it really well down.
Oh, and as far as as today is, 5 years from now, it'll look so primitive.
That's right. It's amazing, isn't it, how fast things change?
Sure. But things don't always change fast enough.
That's right. We have a lot of kids who are suffering with diabetes, and there's a lot of paperwork that it takes to make a medical device. You found a build-it-yourself injector for insulin.
Yeah, I think the story here is that to get through the Food and Drug Administration, FDA, is a lot of work, and it could take years. Mm-hmm. But if you've got a person who is suffering from something like diabetes or any other number of things, we've got engineers out in who are in this world. We've got all sorts of amazing things that are out there. But your child or a person suffering something may not have the 10 years to get through. Why not put the instructions on the internet and let dad or mom put it together for you?
Because that might be just fine. Is there a danger? And that's where we come into a conversation where you have to weigh the possibilities. Mm-hmm. Is it dangerous? If so, maybe we don't want to try it. But if there's no long-term possibility, what's the worst-case scenario, then maybe this could help people.
Well, this gentleman who put it together is Jason Calabrese. He's a software engineer. He basically followed the instructions from some blueprints online, put it together. His son carries around a backpack with him. And, you know, you can think of whatever, you know, ailment a person could have. And if it makes their life better today, while they're going through whatever approval process they just go to in the future, you can solve today knowing that something better may come out later on.
There you go.
We live in the future, man.
We live in the future, and we're moving toward the future even farther.
Oh, awesome. Awesome.
So I don't know. I think with all of the innovation and with all the abilities that we have, I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think, Chip?
Only if we can come back next week.
I think we can. I think we got there's a lot of stuff happening. It's the end of the school year, and my calendar is full, but I think we can squeeze in a show next week.
Oh, how wonderful.
If you need more information, you can give us a call. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Send us an email, toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. You can find our show on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can go to our news site, news.toomuchscrolling.com, and find all the information you need to survive another week. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
We'll see you in the future.